So the first question we have now is how to find in ourselves this thing that moves us, that we are really pushed by. Now this morning's talk, and I see there were a number of people here who were there, so I don't want to repeat anything in excess, but there is a certain point that came that I brought forward there that I must bring forward again. Namely, that mythologies are basically the same everywhere. And consequently, the images of a mythology are not primarily references to historical events. They come from the psyche and they talk to the psyche, and their primary reference is to the psyche, to the spirit, as we call it, and not to a historical event. In our tradition, however, they have been applied to historical events. The motif of the virgin birth, the motif of death and resurrection, the motif of ascension and so forth are interpreted as historical events. And if you begin to doubt the possibility of these as historical events, you may be troubled in your faith. And you will lose the symbol, because you reject it. It's given to you as a kind of newspaper report of something that's supposed to have happened somewhere. Now you study biology and become such an intimate problem that you don't even want to consider it as to whether a virgin birth can have been accomplished. Is that what it referred to? Is that what the mystery is? It isn't what the mystery is. The mystery does not refer to something that might or might not have happened at a certain date in a certain place. It's a motif that is found in the myths all over the world and so must speak to the human psyche in another way entirely. Now, when these symbols are gone, we have lost the vehicle of communication between our waking consciousness and our own deepest spiritual life. And the only problem is to reactivate the symbol, to bring it back to life and to find what it means. Not to a possible history, but to you in some way or another. Now, what did Jung do when he decided to find what his myth was? This is a very interesting enterprise. Childish. He asked himself, what was it I most enjoyed doing when I was alone and allowed to play when I was a little boy? And what he liked to do was put little stones together and make little cities out of stones. So he said, well, I'm a big man now, I'll handle big stones. And he bought himself a piece of property in a beautiful place on the Zurich Lake, the other end from the city of Zurich, way out, lovely place. And he begins building a house. And as he's working here with his hands, big man he was, his imagination is activated. That reactivation of the imagination was the beginning of the work. And he found that his dreams were becoming very important to him and very rich. And then he began writing about his dreams and these silly little impulses, this theme, that theme, which have come out of dreams and are not for any purpose but to bring the dream up to consciousness began coming through. Then he would make pictures of some of these dream things, always in a very solemn way, in a book. Now this book is going to be published one of these days. It is the kind of thing one would not wish to have published. It is just too private. But it was his ceremonial, ritualistic exploration of the place from which the mystery of his life came. And very soon he was realizing that his dreams corresponded to the great mythic themes that he had been involved in that work, the Transformations, Symbols of Transformation. The mandalas that began coming, he was the first to become interested in mandalas as a personal psychological vehicle of self-discovery. He had two very good friends who came along in the course of the years. One, Heinrich Zimmer, a great Indologist, and the other, Richard Wilhelm, a great sinologist, two men of great knowledge of the mythic lore of India and China, respectively. And these helped him to recognize relationships